Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorek. We want to spend a few minutes today talking about polling. This election season has been very surprising. You start with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York. She unexpectedly defeated one of the most powerful Democratic congressmen in the nation. In Florida, you had Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum. He won a Democratic nomination for governor. That win took pollsters and political operatives by surprise as well. And just this week, and a little closer to home, Boston City Councilor Ayanna Pressley's decisive victory over popular 10-term incumbent Congressman Mike Capuano. Definitely a surprise, since in the last official poll in the race, a WBUR poll from the end of July, Capuano was leading Pressley by 13 points. Now, obviously, pollsters and analysts don't have a crystal ball, but how did this race end up so drastically different from what we were expecting? And were there signs that the tide was turning? Here to help answer some of those questions is Steve Cazella. He's president of the Mass Inc. Polling Group. Steve, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Glad to be here.
So I would like to start with just your initial takeaway from what you're seeing in the 7th. You've, I know, been looking back at some of those poll numbers and some of the turnout results as well. What stands out to you?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things worth saying. First, I don't think there's any people who read polls very often that would see a poll from 38 days out as something where we should necessarily take it as a prediction. That's sort of the first thing. You know, I was actually a little surprised to see how many people were going back and looking at that poll and using it as sort of using it to question poll accuracy, given how long ago it was done. But there also are some interesting things that that have stood out in the going back and looking at the poll that suggests that actually the pump was primed at that point. You know, one way to look at polling is it's a snapshot in time. It's not a perfect snapshot because, you know, when you're talking about likely voters, you're trying to survey a universe that doesn't exist yet. You know, you're trying to sample a group that hasn't really formed itself yet. But when you look at that poll, some things stand out. One was that a lot of young voters actually hadn't even heard of Ayanna Pressley yet. So this wasn't something where if only we'd surveyed more young people, we would have found something different. You know, this was something where at that point, opinion was still coming together. They were sort of primed to hear Pressley's message in a lot of ways. A lot of young people were looking for something new, someone new to Congress with fresh ideas and perspectives, is how we phrase the question. But they hadn't heard of Ayanna Pressley, 41% never heard of, and there were still a lot of undecided voters at that point, particularly among young people.
So, and we'll get into that whole idea of likely voters in just a second, but I want to ask you about turnout as well. Turnout was pretty high for a non-presidential primary, 25% in Boston. Can you put that into perspective for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was another thing that I think was very interesting. And it's another thing that relates to sort of how polling is done. Because you know, when you're trying to forecast what a likely voter is a month out and you see that a bunch of young people don't know who one of the key candidates is, you know, that can lead you to believe that if that election were held that day, which of course it isn't, and that's sort of one of the philosophical limitations of polling, I guess, that, you know, who turned out on that day would have probably been a lot different, you know, because if you think that Ayanna Pressley caught on in the last month and her candidacy sort of went viral similar to how Ocasio-Cortez's did, you know, but it only did it in the last month. If the same people had turned out even a month before, I just question whether or not the result would have been the same as what we saw this week.
So talking about some of those younger voters, I know traditionally one of the tools we use when we're doing polls is phone calls, trying to get people on the phone. I'm wondering if there's a conversation to be had here about whether it's time to rethink the way we conduct polls and whether it's effectively reaching people, especially if younger voters are going to start showing up at the polls. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty confident that if we could do a poll on almost any mode, you know, and we knew perfectly well who was going to vote and we could reach them, you know, all the time with 100% reliability, you know, it wouldn't really matter. I'd also say that we could, even if we did a phone poll sort of late in the game, I'm pretty confident there too that we could reach a representative sample, you know, but if we do a poll that far in advance and the race fundamentally changes, it wouldn't have mattered, I don't think, if we had done this poll on any mode. You know, we've certainly done a lot of research on it and found that we can do reliable internet polling, reliable telephone polling, and there are advantages to each one as far as who can be reached and the demographics of the people who tend to respond to each mode. mode. But I don't, I don't think that in this case that would have made a difference. You know, in the Ocasio-Cortez race, there wasn't any public polling that I'm aware of. So that one came as a surprise for a bunch of other reasons. But in this case, I think it more had to do with the timing of what it was, of when the poll was done and how late I believe this election came together, rather than just, you know, what mode we used or non-response bias or anything like that.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think it's a question we're going to continue to come back to, because we're seeing these candidates now take a different campaign strategy. They're trying to reach voters that don't normally show up at the polls, and as you said, that when you guys look at the numbers, you're looking at likely voters, and it's hard to figure out who those likely voters are if we're talking about a group that hasn't voted before or doesn't usually show up. So how do you counter that? How do you crack that?
Yeah, it is where there's the greatest risk of sort of a polling miss when the electorate looks a lot different than you know what you're expecting or what you've seen historically, or people answer questions differently than they have in the past. You know, we saw that back in 2014 with the gubernatorial primary then, you know, when the electorate was smaller than I think some of the polls were counting on. So, you know, those are kind of I think the two most recent examples of problems that have happened here in Massachusetts. If we are anticipating a larger electorate, the traditional methods still work, and I think it's reasonable to anticipate that in this particular cycle. I really just think that, but I should also say that we'll know more soon. You know, we'll get the data on specifically who voted and right. be able to do much more demographic analysis. You know, again, my sense is that even if we'd polled exactly who turned out and polled them back in July, you still would have seen a bunch of the young people who ended up turning out and voting for Presley saying, I don't know who that candidate is.
Well, I do appreciate you weighing in on this, because this is a little bit like bringing the weatherman in and yelling at him because it didn't rain. But so I understand that this is obviously you're making a best educated guess here. But
yeah.
So I want to look at the GOP side of things. Scott Lively, challenging a very popular incumbent governor, ended up with more than 36% of the vote. Did that surprise you? Was that high, or is that about what you expected?
I'd started to hear, you know, that he might do well closer to the end. I mean, this is another one where he hadn't polled in even longer than the race in the 7th. I mean, I think all of the polling that we did sort of earlier in the summer in the primaries, we shouldn't really count that as something that's going to tell us about what's going to happen in the fall. You know, it can tell us sort of where we've been. And I think it has been interesting to see the sort of challengers struggle to gain name recognition. But what the Lively and Baker result tells me sort of beyond polling is that there is this division within the GOP that's been there before. You know, Baker had a challenger in 2014 also, and Mark Fisher at that time did not quite as well, but I think he got 30%. But transitioning to general election mode, I think what we need to do is you know, let voters tell us what's on their minds, you know, and let them tell us whether or not this sort of Democratic energy that the Presley campaign seems to have awoken is transferable, or if Charlie Baker is just as popular as he's always been and, you know, people are sort of content with his management style.
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at the Lively numbers, that kind of mirrors what we saw in the 2016 presidential election. You did have about a third of the state's voters, more than a million people, who voted for Trump. I'm curious if you think there are any kind of big picture lessons for Republicans to take out of these numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you also saw that even more recently. I mean, you saw it this week with Jeff Diehl, you know, Donald Trump's former campaign co-chair here in Massachusetts, winning the Republican primary to challenge Elizabeth Warren. So I think it is very clear that Trump's brand within the Republican Party, Trump's brand and that the brand of politics that Trump brings is quite strong. You know, Charlie Baker, I think, is a bit of a different slice of the GOP, and I think there's some overlap between his part and sort of the Jeff Diehl and Donald Trump part. There certainly are divisions within the Mass GOP, and my Republican friends, I don't think would argue with that. Trump's brand is quite strong. Baker's brand is quite strong. I wouldn't say there's really clearly a struggle for supremacy, you know, right now, you know, because now they have a general election to go through, and in each case that's going to be pretty much their only alternative for Republicans that has a shot of winning. But even so, that looking forward, that is something where I think we should expect the tension to continue and probably we'll keep seeing, you know, sort of the moderate wing versus the more, I guess, Trumpian wing.
And we talked about the high turnout, especially here in Boston, but how about for the Republican primaries? What was the turnout like there?
Yeah, that was interesting. Actually, turnout was quite robust in the Republican primary. That it kind of got lost in the all of the conversation and noise around the 7th congressional district. You know, that story kind of dominated. But turnout in the Republican primary, we were over 270,000. It was actually the highest turnout Republican primary for a midterm since 1990. So there actually is energy on that side as well. We had two competitive races in the Republican side, which was, I think, perhaps part of the reason. You know, if you give people something to vote for, they're more likely to turn out to vote.
Makes sense to me.
That certainly contributed to it.
Well, that's Steve Cazella, president of the MassSync polling group. Steve, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here.